Our morning today's daf in Bava Basra is Nun Beis. We are on an Alpha Nun Beis. We're starting today at the two dots, Tana Rabbanan. We start with the Braisa, third parak of Bava Basra. The Gemara is going to digress a little bit over here from the Mishnah. We're going to come back to the Mishnah in just a moment as we head to the middle of the first Amud of today's daf. But right now we're digressing and we are discussing taking something from women, children, and slaves. What's the problem? So I'll read the Rashbam in just a moment. The Rashbam is going to explain what the problem is. But first, let's learn the halacha together. Tana Rabbanan with the Gemara quotes of Braisa. In Mekablan Pikdonos, you're not allowed to take any type of security. Security over here, not the best translation. A Pikdonos just simply means an object to watch. In other words, he's asking you to watch something. So under certain circumstances, you shouldn't say yes, and you shouldn't agree to do so. So in Mekablan Pikdonos, lo menanoshim, v'lo menavadim, v'lo menatinokos. So you shouldn't take a Pikdonos from a woman, nor from a slave, nor from a child. Why not? So let's take a look together at the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, "Blomin anashim." The Rashbam writes, "The eagle amemar ganavim labaleim ladonehem." Because in these circumstances, one can make the argument that really they're stolen. These are all stolen items, and basically, what you're asked to do is you're asked to aid and abet in terms of the theft. Now, you don't know that they're stolen, meaning it's not. It's not definitive that the items in question were actually stolen, but there's a good suspicion, and under such suspicion, basically what you should do is you should demur, and you should say thank you, but no thank you. In other words, I can't help you out. And the same thing with children as well. They probably stole from the house that they were living in. Now, from the Rashbam, it certainly sounds like we're not talking about children living in their parents' home. You could make a deek in the Rashbam. I don't know if I'm reading too much. But you could make a deek in the Rashbam that if a child wouldn't steal from his own parents, but if he's in a foster home, or if he's, you know, or, you know, whatever, if he's living in an orphanage, so there is a likelihood that he's going to steal. I reference you to the classic Oliver Twist. Anyway, but either way, the Rashbam goes on to write, and you cannot be misayeh de over avera. Misayeh de over avera is kind of like lifnei iver is yisur Torah, where you're not allowed to help somebody, assist somebody in terms of violating an iser, and misayeh is like kind of like one grade down, one scale down. Lifnei iver is an yisur Torah, lisayeh is an yisur derabanan. What's the basic difference? So lifnei iver is where tzchad aver de nahara, or train aver de nahara, where there's no other way that he's going to get the iser without your facilitating. So that's lifnei iver. Misayeh means that there are other ways that he could do the Avera, but you happen to be helping him out. In either event, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to aid and abet. And so by you taking the Pikadon, again, you don't know it was stolen, right? Full admission. And you'll see that will play out in the halacha in just a moment. You don't know it was stolen, but because of the serious consideration that it was, so therefore you shouldn't take it from them.
They already did the Avera.
Yeah, but correct. In other words, they did the avera, but by you holding it, sure, you're going to be aiding and abetting.
Right.
And if they have nobody to deposit it by and they're expected to hold on to it, well, they're not going to hold on to it, and they're going to return it back to its rightful owner. So basically, if you hold on to it, so you're going to be aiding and abetting, and if you refuse them, and if everybody refuses them, so then there's a good chance that it's going to go back to its original owner. Okay, Adkan. So that takes us to the first part of the Braisa. So the Braisa continues. Now, if you took it from a woman, so who should you give it back to? You should give it back to the woman. Now, didn't we just say that they're going to steal? So yeah, we did say that, but we don't, again, I go back to the point that we made already a couple times. We don't know that they stole. It's a chance that they stole. But on the chance that they stole, we're not going to assume that's in fact the case. We're just simply saying, look, if the question was posed, can you hold this for me? Your answer should be no. But let's say you didn't say no. Let's say you said yes. Okay, you shouldn't have, but you did. And now you want to return it. So who do you return it to? So we're not saying that she stole it. We're saying that there's a chance that she stole it. But but now that you want to return it, you did a good job being a nifkad, watching the item, but now you want to return it to the woman. It's hers. Now, the meisar. Now, what if the woman dies yachzir labala? So then you return it back to the husband. And the Rashbam says this one's easy, meaning it's a very easy halacha to explain. Miman of shach, meaning let's pick one of our two options. Option number one: the item actually belonged to her. Oh, if the item belonged to her and she dies, what happens to the estate of a woman after she dies? After a wife after she dies, her husband is yarish his wife. So that means that it belongs to the husband. So you return it to the husband. Let's go with option number two. Let's say she stole it. Okay. The likelihood is she stole it from her husband. So therefore, you're returning it back to the husband, to the rightful owner. So miman of shach, the Rashbam says, under either circumstance, if the woman asked you to hold on to it, you said yes, which you shouldn't have done to begin with, but you said yes, and then now she died, now you want to return, you return to the husband, miman of shach. Kibul mina eved. Now, what if you took it from an eved? Now, again, your first response should have been no. Eved comes over to you and says, hey, look, I have an item. Can you hold it for me? So really, you first should say no. But you didn't say no. And then you took it from the eved. So what do you want to do now when you want to return it? Yachzir le'eved. So you return it back to the eved. And again, it's the same basic idea. It's that we don't know that the item... was stolen, but at the same time, we're not going to say definitively that the item was stolen. So therefore, bring it back to the Evan. Now, if he dies, you return it back to the master. And again, we can go through the same iman of shach. Meaning, if it in fact belonged to the Evan, he dies, well, the master acquires all of his possessions then. And if he stole it, so then you're returning it back to its rightful owner. Okay, here's where now, that was all pretty straightforward. Here now is where it gets a little bit tricky, and that is the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, Yachzir l'rabba. I'm looking at the last Rashbam on the Amud. Demistama, kol mashakana eved kana rabba. V'nira be'enai. The Rashbam says, now that we went through the brice and we went through the permutations, the Rashbam says, I'm going to tell you my opinion on the following. Du'adin in the shachra eved v'achar kach meis yachzir l'rabba. Let's say the eved was freed. Sorry. Let's say the eved was freed, and then afterwards he died. So it's somewhat of a complex scenario. So the eved asked you to wash something for him. You should say no, but you didn't. You said yes, and you took it. And now you're holding on to the item that was given to you by the eved. Now, if you're going to return it back to the eved. If the eved dies, you return it back to the master. What if the eved was freed in the interim? So in other words, after he gave it to you, then he was freed, and then he died. Now what do you do? So the Rashbam says, if you ask me, I think this is what you should do. So yachzir l'rabba sharei eved haya kishehifkid alazev v'sam avadim gazlanim him. Well, look, when he gave it to you, he was an eved, and the nature of an eved is that he's a gazlan, and so therefore I strongly suspect, says the Rashbam, that really belongs to the master. And even though he was freed, and once you're freed, obviously all your possessions become yours, but even though he was freed, I would still say give it back to the owner, because the likelihood is it belongs to the owner. But the Rashbam says, but I'll tell you this, if let's say the same circumstance happened regarding the woman, I wouldn't have said the same thing. The Rashbam continues, aval im nisgarshay isha v'achakach meisa. So the woman asked you to wash something. Again, your first answer should be no, I'm not going to watch it. But you didn't say no, you said yes and you watched it. And then afterwards she died. Sorry. And afterwards she got a divorce. And then afterwards she died. So the Rashbam says, I wouldn't say the same halacha. So yachzir li yorsheha v'lo labala. Dimichesh nisgarsha ein abal yorsha. Because once, since she got a divorce, her husband's not going to inherit her. And the Rashbam basically is saying, and I'm not going to compare a woman to that of an eved, meaning an eved has a propensity to steal. So therefore, even if the eved was freed before he died, I'm still going to say, this is all the Rashbam, I'm still going to say that the likelihood is it belongs to the owner, and therefore you should return to the owner. But when it comes to the woman, I'm not going to say that a woman has a propensity to steal. Again, there is a suspicion, but suspicion does not mean that she definitively did it, and I'm not going to say that there's a strong likelihood that she did so as well. Because there's a suspicion, so therefore you should always say no when asked the question, do you want to watch this? For me, your answer is no, I don't want to watch it. But in the event that you took it, and now you're going to return it, so if she died while still being married, return to the husband, miman of shach. If she was divorced and then she died, so then give it back to her family, meaning her yershim. Okay.
What about the eved on it for the holocaust?
Yeah, you know, correct. Understood. Understood.
Guilty.
Yeah, in other words, how do I say this? We're not assuming they're bad people. We're just simply saying that, look, they're in a situation where there's a chance that they're going to steal. So when asked the question, do you want to watch this, you should say no. You don't want to be over your de'avera. But in the event that you take it, you don't assume they stole it. You still give it back to them. In other words, but it's just a question of avoiding a possible assist in somebody stealing something. Okay.
Because with a woman, things belong to the husband, the evidence.
Yes. Right. Agreed. There's a basic difference between an Evid and an Isha. Continuing now in the Braisa, if you accept it from the Evid, so return it back to the Evid, but if the Evid dies, so then you return it back to the master. Kibo mena katan yasalo segula. Now, what if you take it from a katan? Now remember the Rashbam told us at the beginning of this discussion that it's a katan that is an orphan. He's not growing up in his family home, so he's growing up in some foster home. So let's say he asks you to watch something. So again, your first answer should be no. I'm not going to watch it because I'm really not sure who it belongs to. But keep him on a katan, but once you take it from the katan, so don't give it back to him. Why not? Top Rashbam on the Amud Nun Beis Amud Alf Lo Yachzir Lo Sharei Yodei Lishmor Ukimash Lichli Ibudami. Well, if you give it back to the katan, he's not going to know what to do with it. He's not going to know how to take care of it. It's basically like throwing it away, and don't do that. So Mishihichzolo Ela Yachzir Lo Skula Otsar Hashigado VeYachzir Lo Kama Mefarsh My Skula. So basically, what you should do is that if a katan gave you something to watch, so again, first thing you should say is no. But once you take it, so then you have to keep it. Not only do you have to keep it, but basically put it in a trust. Now, exactly what should be that trust vehicle? Stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in a moment. Now, if he dies, if the cotton dies, so you give it back to his yorshim. Okay. The Braisa continues, and the Braisa says that they're all about to die, and they say this belongs to so and so, and the Rashbam says we're even talking about the cotton over here, and so in a declarative statement they say it belongs to so and so, yasa kipirushan. So There is a certain moment of truth, so to say, when a person is about to die, and so therefore we are going to extend them a certain amount of credibility in terms of them determining who it belongs to. You see, says the Rashbam, again quoting the Rashbam again, if they're not about to die, they're going to take care of it in themselves. Meaning, obviously, they're embarrassed that they stole it from somebody, and if they want to do what's good and what's right, so they're going to take care of it themselves, and they're not going to divulge to anybody who it belongs to because they'll take care of it themselves. But if they're on their deathbed and they know they're dying, and they know that if they don't give instruction of who it belongs to, so then they know it's not going to return to that person. So therefore, we believe them. But then the Braisa goes on, and the Braisa gets interesting. The imlav yaseh perush leperushan. But what if you don't believe them? What does that mean? What if you don't believe them? So the Rashbam over here gives a couple of explanations. I'm going to just quote the first pshat of the Rashbam. Klomar. The Rashbam writes, V'im lo mehem elahu nifkad sh'apikadon shel oso ploni hu. Elo shel balim shelahem hu. U'mitoch busha inam rotzim lomar shuhu shel balim. Delo lizchazu kikazlanim v'ganavim. Okay, so let's say the Nifka just simply doesn't believe the story that's being told to him. But rather, it belongs to the actual owner. And umitoch busha in emrotim lamar shuhu shal balim. And they were embarrassed, and therefore that's why they didn't divulge who the actual and the real owner is, because right before they died, they don't want people to say, hey, the guy's a thief, right? You heard what he just said right before he died? Oh, that guy's a thief. So therefore, what do you do? The Rashbam continues, yasa nifkat perish achir leperisho, shiachzu lebaaleihem shal elu. So you return it back to the baaleihem, meaning, just go through each one of the cases. In the case of woman, give it back to her husband. In the case of an Eved Kenani, give it back to his master. In the case of the Katan, give it back to whoever is entrusted with, whoever is taking care of him. Velola oso ploni, not to the person that they identified, because again, they're just making up a story because they don't want people to think that they're a Gazlan. And we're going to see a story in just a moment, says the Rashbam, and that story is going to speak out to this pshat. Okay, so It's a little bit tricky. The halacha is a little bit tricky, admittedly. Where, again, sequence of events. If any one of these people ask you to watch the Pikadon, so your first answer should be, no, I'm not going to watch it. Right? And the Rosh Hashanah said, over Yidei Avera. Because by you agreeing to watch it, you're going to be aiding and assisting them in a possible theft. They want to lay low. They want to hide the stolen goods until people kind of like forget about it. You should not watch it. Now, if you agree to watch it, so who do you return it to? So if they're still alive, you return it to them. If they died, you return it back to the owner. If they're on their deathbed and they're saying now, declaratively, who it belongs to, so generally they're to be believed. But if you have a suspicion, and this part gets a little fuzzy, because it's kind of hard to quantify this. But if you have a suspicion that what they're telling you is not true, so then you should follow your suspicion and give it back to their owner, meaning the wife's husband, the child's caretaker, and the Eved's master. Okay, and a story.
If you don't believe him, why are you taking me in the first place?
Right. That's what you should have said no to begin with. That's, in other words, if you follow the Bryce's first ruling, you never get to any of these other problems. Fourth line down in Beis Amadav, the Vasar de Rabbi Berachana, Kika Shachva, the wife of Rabbi Berachana, she is on her deathbed. Amra, and Kipa de Marta, Bnei Marta. So she said these earrings, so they're not mine. They belong to Marta. Marta's the name of Atama Chacham, and the sons of Marta. I'm sorry, Ubnei Barta, the grandchildren of Barta. So also come to Rav, so they go in front of Rav Amalei, Ma'amnalach Aseke Perisha, Vilo Asa Perish La Perisha. So if you believe them, so then fine, so then give it back to whoever they declared the owner is. But if you don't believe them, so then don't give it back. So what should you do? Again, like the Rashbam said earlier, give it back to her husband. Okay, now, Igadami, the Gemara has a slightly different version of how this incident ended. Hachi Amarle, this is what Rav said. I amido lach asay kepirsha vilo asapirsh to pirsha. It's not really going to be a function of credibility, it's going to be a function of wealth. If they're wealthy, then return it. And if they're not wealthy, so then don't return it. If who's wealthy? So the Rashbam over here offers two explanations of the Gemara. The Rashbam is the first wide line on the page. The Rashbam writes, the Amida Lach, Osam Shiyom Erishahem Shalahem. Let's say she says it belonged to Marta and it belonged to the family of Marta. So if they're actually a wealthy family, V'ru'uyam Lahavki Kipi V'shar Chafetzim Asei Kepirushah. And that means to say that they're wealthy enough where they could be the owners of such expensive earrings. So then you return it to them. V'yichzirim lehem inami, or the Rashbam says, "Oh, I'll give you another pshat in the Gemara, and that is the following: I amida lach ishtecha sheish lecha avim shenasal lamamon." Let's say it's not a question of whether they're wealthy; it's a question of whether your wife is wealthy, because if your wife was wealthy, so then people would entrust her with money, because she would not be tempted to take it, as she herself is wealthy. I'm sorry. I backed up in the Rashma. Right. If your wife was wealthy and people would entrust her with those items and not be worried that you're going to take them from her or she herself is going to keep it, so then you're going to believe her. Otherwise, you're not going to believe her. So again, the basic idea is that normally if a person's dying and they say that this item does not belong to me, it belongs to so-and-so, you're going to believe them, unless for whatever reason, the Gemara doesn't explain what the reasons would be, maybe wealth would be an issue, but for whatever reason you're suspicious, or under those circumstances, then you return it to who it would go to had she not made a declaration. Continuing, you take a pikadon from a child. So again, you shouldn't do it, but you take a pikadon from a child, so don't give it back to him. The Rashbam explained earlier, it's like throwing it away when you're giving back to the child. He's not going to know how to take care of it. What do you do with it? So you make a trust out of it. So what do you? How do you invest the money? My segula. Rav Chista Amar Sefer Torah Rabba Baravuna Amar Dikla De'achamine Tamre. So one of two possibilities, says the Gemara. Number one, take the money and invest in the writing of a Sefer Torah. Number two, Rabba Baravuna says, take the money and invest in the buying of the tree, and the beauty of a tree, especially a palm tree, is that it brings out fruit, so therefore you're getting dividends, annual dividends from your investment. Okay. Now we finally go back to the Mishnah, and we're wrapping it up. It's been a long time since we've been in this Mishnah. This Mishnah takes us all the way back to Mem Beis Amud Aleph. We are right now on Nun Beis Amud Aleph, so that is more than 10 blot ago. The Mishnah talks about making a chazaka. So we said that a husband cannot make a chazaka on his wife's property, and his wife cannot make a chazaka on her husband's property, and the Gemara already discussed that at length. And now on to the next part of the Mishnah, which is a father and a son. A father and a son have a very strong relationship in that if the son's sitting on the father's property or vice versa, so they can't make a kinyan chazaka, because the assumption is that my occupancy over here is not a reflection of my ownership, it's my father. My father and I are so close that I'm always on his property. And he's always on my property. So it's the kind of relationship where your occupancy cannot turn into a cheskas gimel shanim. I'm Rav Yosef, afilu chilko. Now Rav Yosef says, now what if father and son divided? Meaning that up until now they had a very, very tight relationship. And it wasn't, in fact, it was even one account in the bank. Right, it was a joint account, but then finally a day comes, and you don't even have to add drama to the whole story. They just decided that it's time the two of them split up. So now they're financially independent of one another. Independent, I just simply mean they're differentiated. Father has his account, son has his account, and they're no longer sharing the same pot. So Rav Yosef afilu chilko. So Rav Yosef says, I will say that even if they were financially split from one another, and they were really two separate accounts, I would still say that the kind of relationship that the father and son have is such that when the son occupies the father's property or vice versa, so it doesn't create a ownership. Because, again, they're just so familiar with one another. Rava Amar Chilkulo. And Rava says, no, I don't agree. Rava says that once they're divided, they're considered two separate entities. And then, if the son has been sitting on the father's property for more than 3 years, unchallenged, unchecked, so then he's going, and he has a taina, so then he's going to end up owning the property. Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Midifta, but Rav Papi of the Chilkulo Karava. And in terms of a ruling, the Gemara says that there was an actual incident. Rav Papi had a question that came to him, and he ruled like Rava, which means that once once they're divided, so then they can create a chazaka one and another. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Yishai Le'Rav Chia Mehormez Ardishid. I heard going all the way back to Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, and remember we just said this a couple days ago. Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov is Rav Nachman, but you know sometimes he's given the appellation, especially when there are other Rav Nachmans involved, like right over here. Like there's Rav Nachman Yitzchak, so therefore it says Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov. So I heard from going all the way back to Rav Nachman, Chilkulav, that once they're divided, so then no, we're not going to assume that they are still super attached to one another, super connected, interconnected with one another. Once they're divided, so then we're not going to apply the rule of the Mishnah, which means that they can create a chazaka one onto another. Tanya na mehachi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa as well. Ben shechilik v'ishto, shenizgarsha harein kishar kol adam. Once the son has separated off from the father, and now they're financially independent of one another. And once the wife gets a divorce from her husband, so now harei kishar kol adam, so they have the kind of relationship where basically, like a regular person. And when a regular person occupies another person's property for 3 years with a taina, without a machal, so he's going to acquire the property. Same thing is going to be true regarding the son and his father's property. Same thing is going to be true with an ex-wife and her ex-husband's property. Itmar. Sorry. Yeah, okay. Itmar. Echem in ha'achim shayya nosev and nosein besoch habayis. The hayu'onus usharis yotzen al shmo. Okay. The Gemara now is going to have the following discussion, and that is, you have one of the brothers who basically is running the family. Okay? A whole series of brothers are are inheriting a Yerusha. Right now it's an estate. The estate has not been divided amongst the brothers. And right now the oldest of the brothers, I'm assuming it's the oldest, doesn't have to be, but the oldest of the brothers right now is managing, he's taking care of everything. And not only is he managing the estate property, he also happens to be managing his own assets as well, separate from the estate. And he has documents that have his name on it. Meaning, and he's making a very simple argument. Look, I'm managing two accounts. One is the estate's and one is my own. This is mine. This is not the estate's. And why do I say that? Well, I say that because A, it's true. And B, I also have a proof to do so because the documents have my name on it. It doesn't have the estate's name on it. Now, obviously, he's in a position where it may not be true, where, unfortunately, he may be taking money out of the estate and just simply writing a document with his name on it, attaching his name to that estate. So, obviously, now there's reason to suspect that what he's saying may not be true. V'amar shalihem shenafalo mibeis avim. And what he's saying to the other brothers is, look, we all share the same father and we all have the same estate, but I also, you know, that I came from a different mother. And this particular asset does not belong to the estate, it belongs to me. I inherited from my maternal grandfather. Okay, my mom's dad. So that's what he's saying now to the other brothers. So, question is very simple. Who do we assume is telling the truth? So, I'm Rav Alav Lahavi Rai. So, Rav says that he has to bring a proof. Meaning, Rav is basically saying, I'm suspicious. Look, it's possible that he's right, but at the same time, because he's managing also the family estate as well, in conjunction with his own estate, I don't know. In order for us to ascertain whether or not what he's saying is the truth, he has to bring a proof. Now, the question you're going to ask me is, what proof does he need to bring? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss on the Amud Beis. Ushmul Amar ala Achla Viraya. Now, Shmuel's of the opinion that no, it's upon the brother's responsibility to bring proofs that belongs to him. Meaning that right now he's managing both, and he clearly has in his mind a delineation between the estate and his own assets. And if the brothers think that what he's doing is he's being deceptive, so they have now an obligation to bring a proof that what he's saying is not honest. I'm Shmuel Modeli Abba. Now Shmuel says, look, I think that we're going to trust the managing brother implicitly. And if we're going to try to say otherwise, it is the brother's responsibility to bring a proof. Now I know Rav disagrees with me, but Modeli Abba. But Abba is going to agree to me. Now Abba over here is a reference to Rav. Meaning that was his actual name. His actual name was Abba. But people called him Rav. It's a great Rashbam over here. The Rashbam talks about the kind of reverence that they had for Rav in Bavel. So everyone just simply referred to him as Rav. But his name was actually Abba. So Amr Shmuel Modeli Abba. She meis ala achin lahavi raya. That if he dies, so then it becomes the brother's responsibility to bring a proof. So in other words, here's Shmuel's position. Let me organize this information outside. Shmuel says that in general, the oldest brother is now managing the estate and managing his own affairs. Shmuel says, I'm giving him total credibility on everything he's saying. This is the estate's money, this is my money, and I give him total credibility. And if the brothers think otherwise, they have to bring a proof. And Shmuel says, and I know Rav disagrees with me. And Rav says no. That he has not extended that kind of credibility that this is a separate account where it's his own money. And in order for him to say that, he has to bring a proof. And again, what that proof will be, we'll say later on. Shmuel says that, I know Rav disagrees with me. But I'll tell you this though. If let's say the managing brother dies, and now the brothers want to say, well, this is our estate, and that's your estate. It now becomes the brother's responsibility to prove otherwise. Now, it's a little bit interesting, and let's turn to the Rashbam. And the Rashbam over here explains. She'im meis. Rashbam is about 15 lines from the bottom. V'yesh lo banim liyosho im ha'achin lahav. I'm sorry. Banim liyosho. And the managing brother who died had children who were looking to inherit In other words, the brother's own assets. Because what do you want right now? You want the managing brother's children to have to bring a proof? They don't know anything about their father. They don't know anything about their father's affairs. And what do we have? Remember, the managing brother had actual documentation that said that these assets were separate from the estate. So you have documentation, so that stands up in itself. Shayam mamon shalaviyam al shekenegdo lahaviraya avakisha ach atzmokayim. But you see, when the brother was alive, the managing brother was alive. Hayamato ravala lahaviraya. So you see, Rav says, now I'm saying to you, the managing brother is alive. Look, because you're taking on the responsibility of managing both your account and the estate account, I'm putting the burden of proof on you in order to distinguish that this is the estate and that's your money. But once he's dead, so no, he no longer has that burden of proof, and we'll let the documentation do all the talking. And the Rashbam writes, Fine. So again, now we have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding a managing brother and whether or not we default believe him or whether we do not believe him, and we put the burden of responsibility upon him to substantiate his words. Shmuel says that we believe him. Rav says we're suspicious. The Gemara continues. So Rav Papa says that's a little bit strange, meaning that in the event that he dies, so now we're going to make an argument on behalf of the managing brother's children. The Gemara says, really? In other words, if the father were alive, we wouldn't have extended him that credibility. But once he dies, we're now going to extend that credibility. That's strange. So the Gemara says, "Vaharava afik zuga d'sarfa la v'sarfa da agarata miyasme b'lo raya." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but Rava, you know what he did? I'll tell you what he did: a pair of scissors and a sarfa da agarata, sifre agarata." What we would call medrash. So Rava took it away from the orphans. Now the person who claimed it did not have a proof, but dvarim asum lashal askir. But these are things that are borrowed all the time, lent and borrowed all the time, and therefore Rava took it away from the orphans. Kedeshalach Rav Huna Abar Avin dvarim asum lashal askir. Because, as we learned earlier, the Gemara here quotes it again, if there are things that are lent all the time from one person to another, and the person who's holding on to it says, look, I'm a machzik, and furthermore, I bought it. Meaning, I'm admitting that it belonged to somebody else, but I bought it from him. But it's the kind of thing which is lent all the time, and the original owner says, I didn't sell it to him, I just lent it to him, so therefore, it goes back to the original owner. Einam neman, they don't have nemanus. So, kasha. So the Gemara says, so that really is difficult, meaning, how can we afford the orphans... How can we extend to the inheritors of the managing brother a kind of credibility that we don't actually extend to the brother himself? So the Gemara says, you're right. That's taka. That's a good point, and it's difficult. And I don't understand how we could do that. And the Gemara concludes by saying, kasha. Yeah, it's difficult. By the way, just an interesting Rashbam over here. Generally speaking, whenever you hear kasha versus the word tiyufta, so what we hear time and again, Rashi says this repeatedly throughout Shas, is that kasha means it's difficult, but it's not like a backbreaker. Tiyufta, on the other hand, means that it's difficult, and it really, it's a kind of question which refutes a position. Over here, the Rashbam writes, and it's counter to pretty much every other time this word comes up, that there really is no significant difference between the words kasha and tiyufta. It's basically the same. Okay. Amar of Chista. Amar of Chista. We're on Nun Beis Amud Beis, and we are continuing the Gemara. Lo shano l'dein chalukim b'sasam. Ava chalukim b'sasam emar m'sasok kimeitz. Okay, again, we're talking now about a managing brother. The managing brother now is taking care of the estate. And then, in addition to taking care of the estate, he also has a claim that these are my own assets. And he's got, you know, he's got some sort of documentation proving that they're his own assets. So, is he believed, yes or no? So Rav says that no, the burden of proof is on him. Shmuel says no, he's believed. And now on this machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, Rav Chista chimes in and Rav Chista says, but if already each one of the brothers has their own account, meaning basically that the estate is kind of divided already, chalukin be'isasan, the expression literally means that the dough is divided. In other words, that the estate is already pretty much divided. Amar misasan kimates. So now the managing brother has a very easy argument to make, which is, look, everybody's getting their own revenue stream from the estate, and so I am as well. So the fact that I have my own assets, yeah. Anyway, he could have, and if he claimed that these assets are coming from his mother's side, that's fine. He could have just as easily claimed that this was also part of the estate that we all get. But remember, we're all getting our own. We all are getting our own portion. Fine. Raya Bamai. Now, according to Rav, the managing brother says these assets belong to me. So Rav says the burden of proof is on him. He's got to bring a proof. What kind of proof does he need to bring? So the Gemara brings in a couple of opinions. Rabba Amarai, Be'edim, Rabba's of the opinion, sorry. Rabba's, you know, I was right the first time. Rabba's of the opinion that he's got to bring in witnesses. Witnesses testifying that asset that he claims belongs to him, the land or the whatever, the receivable, whatever asset he says belongs to him, so he needs to bring in witnesses that he actually purchased it with his own money. Rav Sheshet Amarai became a star. Rav Sheshet says, no. Remember, what was he claiming was his? It was a contract. So all you need to do is notarize the contract, Kiyum Hashtar, certify the contract, and then once you do that, that's proof enough. Amalei Rav L'Rav Nachman, Ha Rav, Ha Shmuel, Ha Rabba, Ha Rav Sheshet. So now, you have a managing brother who is claiming that in addition to the estate, he also has a particular asset that belongs to him. Do we believe him, yes or no? So basically, I'm so confused, says the Gemara now. Rav says we don't believe him. Shmuel says we do believe him. Even within Rav, who says we don't believe him. We have two opinions amongst the Amorai, and what kind of proof does he need to bring? Either Edim or Kiyum Hashtar. So basically, the Gemara is saying my head is spinning right now. Who do we follow like? So Mark Kaman Svirale. So who do you hold like? Amalei Ana Masisi Yadana. So he says, look, Rav Shmuel, Rabba Rav Chista. He says, here's what I know. I know a Braisa. So I'm going to say over a Braisa, and then we can go from there. D'tanya. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Echa menachem shayinosim menosim b'so chabayis. So you have a managing brother who's managing the estate of who's managing the estate. V'hayu onos v'shtar z'yotzen al-shmo. And on top of that, now he has a document with his name alone on it. Meaning it's not the estate, but his name is on the document. Document reflects some sort of ownership. Again, a property, a receivable, whatever the case is. V'amar shalihain. And his claim is, no, this asset is different from the estate. I got it from my mom's side. So Alav Lahavi Raya. So the Braisa says the burden of proof is on him. Okay. So we know that the Braisa falls like Rav. So at least now, after having learned the Braisa together, here's what we could say definitively. The Braisa sides with Rav, that the burden of proof is on the managing brother. We still don't know, even after having learned the Braisa together, what kind of proof he needs to bring. Does it have to be Edom? Does it have to be Kiyum Hashtar? But at least we know that the Braisa sides with Rav. And the Gemara says, and we're going to make a very similar halachic statement regarding a woman. A woman is given the financial responsibility of taking care of the financial house. And so therefore she's taking care of her husband's estate. And in addition to that, she also has her own asset. And she says, well, this came from my father. So, and this is not part of my husband's estate. So, either her mother's father or her father's father, here it doesn't matter. She's simply saying is, this does not belong to my husband. Allah lahaviraya. So, because she's managing her husband's estate, or by the way, it doesn't even have to be her husband's estate. It could be that the husband died and it's the kid's estate. Either way, she's going to have to bring a proof that this it's a separate asset. My v'chein. Now the Gemara says, now when all said and done, basically we're making the same point twice over, right? Meaning that the managing brother, if he now wants to claim that there's a separate asset separate from the estate, he's got to bring proof. And if it's a woman who is now managing the estate of the children and her late husband's estate, so she has to bring proof that this is a separate asset, the one that she's claiming is hers. So, the Gemara says, look, as far as a woman is concerned, so here, she could say the following. Shvich alei milsa. Shvich alei milsa means I'm really proud. What is she really proud about? So the Rashbam explains, Tosfos explains as well, that she was really proud about the fact that basically her husband died. And now she is the one who is managing the estate. So, and Basin obviously trusts her to manage the estate. Ama kartachi kame yasme, lo gazame yasme. And she's working so hard now for the orphans that she's managing the orphans' estate. So maybe we can make a very strong argument that she's not going to steal. So Kamashman, the Gemara says, no, we're suspicious that she's going to steal. And Tosus points out over here, second to last Tosus on the Amud, the Tarchi Kasme Emalo Kazalti Miasme Kashtavashma the Adraba. May Tama the Tarchi Kamiasme Gazla Miasme. Tosus points out, wait a second. She's working so hard now to take care of the estate of the children. So now one can easily rationalize. I'm working so hard taking care of the estate, and I'm doing this pro bono, and really, you know what, magiali. I deserve a little bit. And in fact, the Gemara in Gittin, dealing with basically a similar circumstance, where a woman is working so hard to take care of the children, so therefore she's going to be more reheter. She's going to justify the fact that, look, I can skim a little bit off the top. And the Rashba points out, meaning Tosfos is quoting the Rashba. This is Rashba, by the way, not the Rashba. Not the Chidush HaRashba, but one of the Balei HaTosfos. But anyway, so he says, you know what? That effectively is what our Gemara is saying as well. Our Gemara is not saying anything different. Really, the Gemara in Gittin, our Gemara over here in Baba Basra, is making the exact same point. Because she's working so hard, and because she could justify skimming a little bit off the top, so therefore we are going to suspect that maybe she took a little bit off the children's estate, she labeled it her own, and so therefore the burden of proof is on her. Okay, so let's just quickly chazer.
Why don't they say it about the brother?
The Gemara said the same thing about the brother as well. The Braisa says the burden of proof is on the brother, on the managing brother. The Gemara does say this thing. Okay, let's just quickly chazer. So what do we start off this morning with a little bit of a little bit of a tangent. We talked about accepting a pikadon from a either a woman or an Eved Kenani or a katan, and the Braisa starts off by saying, don't accept the pikadon. Chances are they stole it. If you take it, you're going to be misayed over avera. You're going to be aiding and abetting somebody who possibly stole. In other words, you don't want to involve them. Once you took it from them, so then it gets complicated. So then the Braisa says, if they're still alive, return it to them. The Braisa says, if they died, they return it to their owner. What if the wife divorced, or the Eved was freed before they died? I shared a Rashbam with you who had an opinion on that matter. What if right before they died they declared who the real owner of the item was? So under most circumstances you believe them unless you have reason to suspect that they're not telling the truth, and of course that also gets complicated. How do you know? Why would you suspect? Okay, the Gemara was really not that clear about that, but that's what we learned. If you do end up taking a pikadon from a minor, don't return it to the minor. It's like throwing it away. Rather, what you should do is you should make a trust out of it, invest the money. The Gemara gave two suggestions of what an investment would look like. Either be a Sefer Torah, or it would be the purchasing of a palm tree. We then discussed a father and a son who cannot make a chazaka on one another, on another's property, because of the kind of close relationship they have with one another, and therefore one's occupancy of the other's property does not result in ownership. However, once they're divided, we had a machlokas amarayim, and the Gemara concluded that once they're financially independent of one another, so therefore they can create a chazaka one another, similar to that of a wife who divorces her husband. Now they are like just regular people, and their occupancy can result in a cheskes gimel shanim. And finally, the last thing that we covered over the course of this morning was a discussion of a managing brother. The father dies, state is left for the children. One of the brothers is taking on the responsibility of managing. And in addition to the estate, he now claims that he has a separate asset that he inherited from his mother's side. Mother does not share with the other brothers. He inherited from his mother's side, and he's saying it's separate. So, who is the burden of proof upon in order to prove that the asset that he claims is separate is actually separate? Machlok is Rav and Shmuel. Rav says the burden of proof is on the managing brother. Shmuel says no, the burden of proof is on the children. Shmuel says that there's going to be an area where Rav even agrees with him. Within the sheet of Rav, what establishes proof? Machlok of the managing brother. Machlok is Rav and Rav Chista. Rav says witnesses. Rav Chista says, sorry. Rav Chista says, I'm sorry. Machlokas Rav and Rav Sheshes. Sorry. Machlokas Rav and Rav Sheshes. Rav says witnesses. Rav Sheshes says Kiyam Ashtar. And then the Gemara tried to conclude in terms of who the halacha falls like. We quoted a Braisa. And at the end of the Braisa, certainly sounds like we're holding like Rav, that the burden of proof is going to be on the managing brother, that if he claims that an asset is separate from the estate, and he inherited from another source, so he's got to bring a proof that it actually belongs to him and not to the estate. Stop over here.